Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Episode 3 of Bahrain, a Wikipedia reading. It's probably a new concept in podcasts. The lowest form of podcasting is reading a Wikipedia article and adding in your own stuff. The reason I'm doing it is for cognitive rehab, just to get on top of things. Now, look, Bahrain, basically an island of, I suppose, silt or sand sitting in the Arab Peninsula. Sort of basically a desert island. It's got 760 square kilometres of land. A lot of it's got a small little mountain. I forgot what it's called, not Magic Smoking Mountain, in the centre. It's 124 metres above sea level. So, and it's just completely flat and boring and dry and desert swept, and one of the islands is a wildlife sanctuary, the other islands is desert, and then everyone's herded up in this gigantic city at the top called Manmud, or something like that, and it's crisped by a aching amount of naval or sort of roads. It has an offshore oil well which is going to run out. And it's got relationships with Saudi Arabia. It's got causeways and bridges between the different islands. So it's rather interesting. A major international airport and a royal family, which is, in fact, a royal family. It is ruled by a king and a royal family. So two groups of parliament. It's a constitutional monarchy. So it's completely a monarchy. And with some sort of a bit of flavouring of elected thing in one house of parliament. The other part is completely the top 40 thing, which has got the sort of the legislative affair, is the king's ruling family, and there's the king's ruling family. You've only got 500,000 people here, so if you wanted to really say Sydney's got 5 million people, 500,000 people would basically be, the Penrith and Parramatta district, sort of a bit of western Sydney. So the concept of a ruling family in there, it's along the lines of these nightmare councils we have, which we root apart for being corrupt. They sort of put their own people in. If I can say so, the amount of corruption and nepotism I've seen in the education department here in Australia is eye-watering. And you can see that there seems to be a thing where people go towards, they can't back out of it. So they had a time, I think the king died in 2010, a new person. He had a bit of reform for a while, but then slid back into it and got in Saudi soldiers, which are from Sunni. So there's two types of, there's four types of Muslim type. Now, I really can't remember the four types. I remember there's a unique type of Muslim viewpoint in Oman, it's its own sect. Then you've got Sunni and Shiite. Now, Shiite's the Iran-Iraq, and in fact a majority here in Bahrain. The rest of the world is Sunni, so Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Sunni. Now, what the actual difference is, I think, if I remember, the Shia have gone through a numerology and believe that the Muhammad is reincarnated, not reincarnated, but passed on, and there are 13 Omans in sequence, before the end of the world. Complicated thing, one's sort of a little bit more mystic than the other. Of course, beating the stuffings out of each other. And so it's often been the case that the Sunni Muslims, with the help of outside influence, have got on top of the Shia Muslims. So the Sunni is Saddam Hussein, and somehow the Sunni elite from Iran came to Bahrain. And of course there's the treaty lands, which is a series of lands in the Gulf that Britain, you know, everyone was stuffing each other up, and so to just survive you had to import your own the British. And so now the British, how Britain is doing this in 2018, they've got a new naval base. The US 5th Fleet is there, and size of the Bahraini Army and Air Force is blisteringly huge. And what on earth they could do? I don't know what the Bahrain could actually possibly do, because it's like a menu. It's beyond stuff, and it's like it's got no features in terms of, you know, defense of it. It's impossible to understand now. We've gone through tourism and demographics, and I'm going on to I've just passed the languages, so I'm ready to go on to the next page. One of the things is the tourism there, it's got some sort of ancient relics. You'd have to know where to go. It's got some Muslim tourism there, various Quranic sites. So if you're if you're Islamic, that would be the I must admit, I don't know the difference from, yeah, what's the difference between Muslim and Islamic? I find that a little bit hard. The underwater theme park, where you can scuba dive, and they have put a submerged 737 underwater to make it a diving theme park. Sort of like, I sort of see that ships have got nautical ones. It's just that a ship can be peacefully scuttled. An aircraft under the water is, you know, generally got a horrible story about it. It's been shot out of the sky, or so many things like that. It's sort of rather hard to understand how it operates. It's a bit spooky, and this land, which is incredibly small, which quite honestly is sort of the population of a few suburbs of Sydney, and sort of the size of the sort of inner suburbs of Sydney, 30 kilometres. So it's 760 square kilometres. I'll have to go back on that. But a lot of that is desert and crinkly stuff. No wonder, with such a imported population, it's got major problems. Similarly, it's got the same population destiny as of a city-state. So Singapore is a city-state. I've forgotten what the other city-state is. Hong Kong's got sort of a much, much larger area, sort of working area, than this 30 kilometres by 30 kilometres. It's sort of sort of hard to get your mind around what it's doing. Now, quite honestly, where do you draw the line? So it was the head of the UN General Assembly for a year, voted the head. Now, like, if you've got China and India, massive, like, India and the UN is sort of like, why is not India on the and Brazil on the National Security Council. This veto system is just, it's sort of like the UN's, it's like a peace organisation, but not quite. It sort of gets the ruling power behind it. Look, I would put India, myself, the population, or have a security system or secret ballot system, or I don't know how it would go. So look, I'm going up to page 12, and on the back of that is page 11, page 13. Now, we've done research, and so research is, it doesn't take long to read and say, oh, hang on, their entire country is producing the output of a university, which is about right. It puts the output of our local sort of, there's a sort of a hick university, there's Sydney University, which is top tier, New University of New South Wales, top tier, middle tier is Macquarie University, and sort of like the working university, which does teachers and concreters and stuff like that, which has sort of merged with TAFE, is Western Sydney University. So Western Sydney University is more productive than Bahrain. And it's not as though these people are doing a lot of teaching. I can't work this out. Okay, education is compulsory for people between 6 and 14. So in Australia, it's basically 3 to 18. Education is free for Bahraini citizens in the public schools. And the Bahraini Ministry of Education is providing free textbooks. Co-education is not used in public schools, with boys and girls segregated into separate schools. Well, at the beginning of the 20th century, Quranic schools were the only form of education in Bahrain. They were traditional schools aimed at teaching children and youth the reading of Quran. After World War I, Bahrain became open to Western influences, and a demand for modern education institutions appeared. In 1990, marked the beginning of the modern public school system in Bahrain, when the Al Haidra Al Kafia School, so Kafia is the ruling family, for boys opened. In 1926, the education minister opened a second public school for boys, Mumma. And in 1928, the first public school for girls were opened. In 2011, there was a total of 126,000 students studying in public schools. Now, let's work this out. That cannot possibly be right with the age demographic profile. That must include people who are not Bahraini citizens but paying for it. In just working it out, in 2004, now if you can imagine, this is sort of dual effort to get my cognitive memory back. You can see that I'm beginning to memorize facts, but it's sort of, they fade very quickly, unfortunately. Okay. King Hamad bin Isa al Kaifra. So Kafra is the ruler, introduced the King Hamad School of the Future project. It uses information ICT to support K-12 education in Bahrain. So the project's objective is to connect all schools of the kingdom to the internet, which is rather, 2004 we had the same thing, the education revolution, 2007-2008, all schools, well, they were connected to the internet, but then they were connected to optical fibre, and every student got a laptop throughout the country of Australia. It didn't last too long before the laptops become unwieldy and useless, and people had more power than their mobile phone. Okay. The project's objective is to connect all schools within the kingdom to the internet. In addition to British intermediate schools, the island served by Bahrain Schools, the BS, is a United States Department of Defense school that provides K-12 curriculum, international and baccalaureate offering. There's also private schools that offer an IB diploma program for all United Kingdom's A-levels. And, of course, we lost a few people from here, sort of recruited from just down the street, recruited as, I believe they were if we're going to Bahrain, I'll have to ask. Bahrain also encourages institutions of higher learning drawing on expatriate talent and an increasing pool of Bahrainian nationals returning from abroad with advanced degrees. The University of Bahrain was established for standard undergraduate study. King Abdulaziz University College of Health Sciences, operating under the direction of the Ministry of Health, trains physicians, nurses, pharmacists and paramedics. In 2001, National Action Charter paved the way for the formation of private universities, such as the Ali University, Amanwa, and the University College of Bahrain in Sahar. The Royal University of Women, the RU, established in 2005, was the first private, purpose-built international university in Bahrain dedicated solely to educating women. The University of London External was appointed MCG, Management's Commolson Group, as a regional representative office in Bahrain for distance learning programs. The MCG, which is the Management Consultancy Group, which is also the Melbourne Cricket Ground, is one of the oldest private institutes in the country. Institutes have also opened, which is the Institute of Banking and Finance, Ernst & Young Training Institute, the Birla Institute of Technology and International Centre, the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, set up a constituent medical university in the country. In addition, the Arab Gulf University, AMA Institutions University, the College of Health Sciences, which are the only medical schools in Bahrain. Ooh, there's something, obviously, a tax dodge for it. Yeah. Or you need that to get Arabic students enrolling in your university. So there's this complex stuff. Health. Bahrain has a universal healthcare system dating back to 1960. Government provided healthcare is free to Bahraini citizens and heavily subsidized to non-Bahrainis. Healthcare expenditure is around 4.5% of Bahraini's GDP, about the same as Australia. According to the World Health Organization, Bahraini physicians and nurses form a majority of the country's workforce in the health sector, unlike neighbouring Gulf states. The first hospital in Bahrain was the American Mission Hospital, which opened in 1893 as a dispensary. The first public hospital was also a ternary hospital to open in Bahrain was the Somalia's Medical Complex, the Somalian District of Mana, in 1957. Private hospitals are also present throughout the country, such as the International Hospital of Bahrain. This is one of my concerns of trying to locate in Australia. So this is your health things. So there's sort of a big wake-up call. Like the rehab, and you're doing rehab in this room, this thing, and you see someone who's got smokes, diabetes, had a bypass, kidney stuff, and we are just pouring huge amounts of money into someone you would see just down the shop in a service session, and there's nothing amazing. That they may have a job driving rally cars or something like that, and you've got this, or they could be a truck driver, and we're pouring millions and millions of dollars into looking after them. But you also recognise that we can't do that for people in remote Australia. So, although I would love to go out to remote Australia just to get away from the hassle of Glenbrook, you might think Glenbrook is ideal. However, it's a little bit, I suppose there are parts in Australia which you look on the map and you say, oh, I'd love to go there. But it's, again, the health system. You sort of say, oh, well, if I was 30, I could sort of negotiate, go to a place and then get sick and then move somewhere else. But now that you're my age, you sort of think about health and stuff like that. The life expectancy in Bahrain is 73 for males and 76 for females, which is astonishing. So for Australia, it's 82, 84 at the moment. But if you're born in 1963, so the thing is, don't type in life expectancy of your country. You say life expectancy of your country born such and such a day. So it's a frightening 70 years old if you're born, when I was born, so it's a bit different. Well, malaria, tuberculosis do not constitute major problems in Bahrain, as neither disease is indigenous to the country. As a result, cases of malaria and TB have declined in recent decades, with cases of contraction amongst the Bahraini nationals becoming rare. Ministry of Health sponsors, you can imagine, this would be one huge mosquito spot pond with all that high temperature and stuff like that. Ministry of Health sponsors regular vaccination campaigns against TB and other diseases such as hepatitis B. Well, you would think, well, Australia doesn't vaccinate, I think, seven or even eight things we vaccinate against. And I don't think we do TB. Bahrain is currently suffering from an obesity epidemic, like Australia. 40% of all females are classified as obese. Oh, God. Bahrain has also one of the highest prevalence of diabetes in the world, fifth place, with more than 50% of Bahraini population suffering from the disease. 15% accounting for 5% of the deaths in the country. Cardiovascular disease accounts for 32% of deaths, being number one cause of death in the country, second to cancer. Sickle cell anemia, thalassemia, are prevalent in the country, with a study including that 18% of Bahrainis are carriers of sickle cell anemias, while 24%... I don't understand the difference between sickle cell anemia and thalassemia. It seems to be... I've always thought it was the same. That's nothing unusual, but it's sort of like Australia gone completely bad. I think Australia would have to be up there in the obese world, but, I mean, it's hard to say. Things work against you. So at least the smoking rate in Australia is sort of plummeted. Islam is a culture. Islam is the main religion, and Bahrainis are known for their tolerance towards the practice of other faiths. Intermarriages between Bahrainis and expatriates are not uncommon. There are many Filipino Bahrainis, like Filipino Child Atlas, Mona Marabella Alwari. Rules regarding female attire are generally relaxed compared to the regional neighbours. Traditional attire of women usually include hijab or abaya, although the traditional male attire is the throb, T-H-R-O-B, which also includes traditional headdress such as the kerif, gutta and gal. Western clothing is common in the country. Well, anything to get a hat on. Okay, art. Well, look, it's hard to say. Imagine if I was reading an article about Penrith, the local thing. A modern movement of art in the country has officially emerged in the 1950s, culminating the establishment of an art society. Exhibitionism, surrealism, as well as calligraphic arts are popular forms of art in the country. And I really didn't really fully appreciate calligraphic light art. Well, not that I'm fantastic enough. I went to a deeper thing of seeing Chinese calligraphy and scrolls, and I sort of could see that calligraphy art is similar to web page design in my view. Pottery making and textile weaving are also popular products that were widely made in Bahraini villages. Arab calligraphy grew in popularity as the Bahraini government was an active patron of Islamic art, culminating in the establishment of the Islamic Museum. Albert Al Karam, the Bahraini National Museum, houses a permanent contemporary art exhibition. The architecture of Bahrain is similar to that of its neighbours in the Persian Gulf. The wind tower, which generates natural ventilation in a house, is a common sight in old buildings, particularly in old districts of Manmar and Marak. So we have equivalent in Australia, which is called evaporative cooling, which is rather problematic because of evaporative cooling in terms that a bushfire ember will get in and start a house on fire. I don't know whether you could You could obviously it's one of those things that I think a lot of people went off solar cells when there was fires associated with electronics associated with them, and that was fixed up. But the least you went across in Australia, where it's, if you want to cool a house and you've got some water, it's much better to have a cooling tower. It would be, I suppose, it would be interesting to me if you could add an evaporative cooling unit, which didn't, which sort of was a, sort of a hybrid, would be bushfire safe and would work on very hot, non-humid days. Sort of, but what's happening here in Australia is there's so many solar cells here anyway. On a very hot day, the houses produce most of the energy. Okay, literature. Literature retains a strong tradition in the country. Most traditional writers and poets write in classic Arabic style. In recent years, a number of younger poets influenced by Western literature are rising, most writing in free verse and often including political and personal content. Ali al-Shawagi, a decorated longtime poet, was described in 2011 by Al Sofra as a literary icon of Bahrain. It's very interesting reading the classic style of Dante's Inferno, or Dante's, whatever it was, Three Journeys to Hell, or something like that. That was interesting reading to see, you know, what ancient poetry was like, and the idea of sonnets and the whole, the Arab, the sort of Shakespeare, you're listening to it, and you forget that it's rhyming and stuff like that. Okay, in literature, Bahrain was the site of the ancient Dalman mentioned in the epic Gilgamesh. Legend also states it was the location of the Garden of Eden. Rather important fact. Gee, well, this is where we think the Garden of Eden was. The style of music in Bahrain is similar to that of its neighbours. The Khalji style of music is the folk music is popular in the country. The sort of style of music, which involves complex forms of urban music performed by ula plucked lute, a violin, and Mizra's drum, is also popular in Bahrain. You can imagine that. Ali Bar was one of the most famous singers in Bahrain, Ali Barha. He performed music with a band called The Brothers. Bahrain is also the site of the first recording studio amongst the Persian gays. States. Wow. Bahrain is the sports. It's the first nation under the United States of America to host other the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation World Championship of Amateur, or whatever that is, in 2018. Cricket was introduced to Bahrain under the KH Sports Excellent. The Premier League comprises six franchise squads of 13 resident cricketers competing in a T20 format. The teams were the SRAM, MRAM, Falcons, Kalam Knight Riders, KN Riders. I like this. What it's MRAM and SRAM means. Intex Lions, the Bahrain Super Giants, Four Square Challengers, and the Aaron Warriors. Wow. I don't know. I think we're going as far as you can go with the Sydney T20 scene called Thunder, stuff like that, but it would be just as boring as, I can't believe how boring it would be, but calling people the Kubcola cricket team, the Lions, Super Giants, Bahrain, that's a bit over the top, a super giant, surely a giant is just enough by itself, but then to say they're a super giant. Sort of, the Knight Riders are sort of like, what were they thinking of? Association football is all most popular sport in Bahrain. Bahrain's national football team has competed multiple times in the Asian Cups, Arab Nations Cup, and played the FIFA World Cup qualifiers. This sort of kicks their ass, unfortunately. Although it never qualified for the World Cup due to Australia knocking it out. Bahrain is its own top-tier domestic professional Football League, the Barani Premier League, basketball, rugby, horse racing are also wildly popular in the country. I can't... Yeah, I know there's... The government of Bahrain is also sponsors the UCI World Team of Cycling, the Bahraini Madeira, which participated in the Tour de France. Brave Combat Federation is a Bahraini-based mixed martial arts promotion which hosted the Bahraini United Emirates, Brazil, Kazakhstan and India. Bahraini MMA Federation has been set up under the patronage of Sheikh Khalid bin Hamad Al-Hafez, the King, and the jurisdiction of the sports minister. Sheikh Nasir bin Hamad Al-Khalifa. Now, the Khalifas are, you know, there's a family that does everything. The development of the MMA in the nation is convened through... That would be so corrupt. Brave Combat Confederation is the largest mixed martial art promotion in the Middle East. Bahrain will be hosting the Amateur World Championships, whatever, in 2017. So you can see this is not up to date. It'd be interesting that there is some information about... You could put, like I'm putting sort of intelligence into this website. So the idea is the development of the world first neuro-optimized intelligent website. So this is dumb in terms of how can it be out of date. Bahrain has Formula One. Both races won by Fernando Alonso. The race has since been hosted annually, except for 2011, when it was cancelled due to the ongoing anti-government protests. And two, the race occurred despite concerns of the safety of the teams and ongoing protests in countries. The decision to hold the race despite the ongoing protests and violence has been described as controversial by Al Jazeera English, etc. In 2006, Bahrain also hosted the inaugural Australian V8 supercar event dubbed Desert 400G Bahrain. Why would another country host an Australian V8 supercar? A V8 supercar is really, really... like, it's completely... The V8 returned early November to Sakhir Circuit until 2010, in which it was the second event in the series. The series has not returned since. The Bahrain International Circuit also features full-length track strip with the Bahrain Drag Racing Club. It has organised invitational events featuring Europe's top drag racing teams to try to raise the profile of the sport in the Middle East. Can I say what's happened is that... The drag racing has sort of lived on in Western Sydney. I think they've closed the tracks now, and people are saying, "Really, we just held you there as a land bank, and now we want to build on your land." So that's what we had there. So there's land they put in the land bank for drag racing, and so this is this cheap land. And it's sort of, so there was, they've built a suburb on, I've forgotten the name of it, in Sydney. So there was a suburb and people, it was Snomus. There's two suburbs which have now been, we sort of had, I think the name of the suburbs is Eastern Creek. There's a suburb on the way down to Campbelltown. There's also Holsworthy Army Base. This huge army base, and they're taking the land back. It's a land bank. Okay. I don't know. For me, mixed martial arts by the King's buddies, boring, and then drag racing. They always trot out, this is so valuable to the Australian economy or various economies. People come, a number of people who go to Bahrain to do it. And obviously, if you are trying to get an Australian V8 supercar, then you are plumbing the absolute depths of depravity. Okay, holidays. On September the 1st, 2006, Brian changed his weekend from being Thursdays and Fridays to Fridays and Saturdays in order to have a day of the weekend shared with the rest of the world. Notable holidays of the country are listed below. Well, that's an interesting piece of information, that Bahrain, the weekend was on Thursday and Friday, then they moved it one day, not to get Saturday. Now, 14, and I think that's the end of Bahrain. So, Bahrain, so let's summarise. Bahrain is flat, maximum height of about 146 metres, I think, with the Smoky Mountain, desert, desalination, running out of natural gas, a population which is lots of universities, sort of similar here. We've got sprouting up universities and institutes everywhere. A constitutional monarchy where it is, you can, if the king is unreasonable, there is theoretically a way of stopping the king to go across. It's national, it's hunted its national animal to extinction. It's got huge amounts of roads and airports and infrastructure going in. It's got the US space out. It's got environmental degradation and land loss to it, loss of coastal habitat. It's got a second largest dugong population compared to Australia. It's a place where it's got mild winters, and the summer it's basically like, it sounds as though you could put out a dumpling outside and it will cook itself. It's like a huge dumpling cooker with huge amounts of steam, etc., coming across. Human rights violation seems really strange. So you've got the standard tension that if Bahrain comes unstuck, you've got a failed state on the border of Saudi Arabia. It's sort of similar, like Yemen, Oman, Saudi Arabia. There's a whole heap of Somalia. All that area has got people have held onto the power too long and oppressed people too long. It's got a problem looking after women in terms of getting them into, theoretically, into parliament. Got them into education, but something is happening. They're not getting into employment there. So it's sort of hard to do. They've got its telco story. It's interesting that it's followed a number of the same things Australia's done. And yeah, it's a strange one, Bahrain. So I'm glad I've learnt a little bit about it. Hope it's interesting to you. I suppose the other thing is that for all this, people, besides having some really cool history of stealing the Black Stone, it's sort of like that's just mind bending. It's also, next thing is to think that people thought, and also because it was legendary for pearls and getting its pearls was something of sort of a mystic aspect of it, also being the original source of the Garden of Eden, where it goes from there. Also, reading the article, you see that the Wikipedia article is a pre-intelligence article. That is, they can do a reference, but they should do a query reference with a time thing. It is, this statement is true for here, but surely it should be questioned at such as this year. So the article itself starts to put up inquiries. It's sort of an intelligence thing, if that could go going through the sport in Bahrain would be just so hard to get into. Thanks a lot for listening. Peter Hill signing off on yet another small country.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.